Chapter 50. In the basin of the port of Rimouski, along the two deserted docks and the long warehouses, the pre-dawn atmosphere was quiet and desolate, the stillness accented by the absence of wind. It was too early for the appearance of the dock workers, the eternally squawking seagulls, and the diesel locomotives that hauled the unloaded cargo to a nearby industrial park. Tied to one dock was the tug that had towed an empty barge up and down the river past the Ocean Venturer only a few hours earlier. It was streaked with red rust, and the ravages from 30 years of hard use lay heavily on its uncompromising lines. A light streamed from the portholes of the master's cabin directly below the pilot house, dimly reflecting across the black water. Shaw checked his watch and pushed a tiny switch on what could have passed for a pocket calculator. He closed his eyes in thought a moment and then began punching the rows of buttons. "Nothing like the old days," he mused, "when an agent had to hide in an attic and mutter in low tones into the microphone of a radio transmitter. Now digital signals were relayed by satellite to a computer in London. There the message was decoded and sent to its proper destination by fiber-optical transmission." When he finished, he laid the electronic unit on the table and stood up to stretch. His muscles were stiff and his back sore. The bane of advancing age. He reached into his suitcase and pulled out the bottle of Canadian Club he had purchased after arriving at the Rimouski Airport. The Canadians called it whiskey, but to his British taste it seemed little different from American bourbon. It struck him as primitive to drink it warm. Only the Scots preferred to down their liquor that way. But then decrepit tugboats lacked such modern conveniences as ice makers. He sat down in a chair and lit one of his specially ordered cigarettes. At least something remained of the past. All he lacked was a warm companion. It was times like these, when he was alone with a bottle and reflecting on his life, that he regretted not having remarried. His reverie was interrupted when the little device on the table gave off a muted beep. Then a fine slip of paper, no more than a quarter of an inch in width, began to issue from one end. A marvel of advanced technology, it never failed to amuse him. He donned a pair of reading glasses, another curse of the creeping years, and began studying the diminutive wording on the paper. The full text consumed nearly half a meter. At the end, he removed his glasses, switched off the transmitter receiver, and replaced it in his pocket. "The latest news from jolly old England?" Shaw looked up to find Foss Gly standing in the doorway. Gly made no move to enter. He just stared at Shaw from under questioning eyebrows, and the expression in the eyes was that of a jackal sniffing the air. "Merely an acknowledgment of my report on what you observed," replied Shaw casually. He began idly wrapping the message strip around his index finger in a roll. Gly had changed from his thermal exposure suit into dungarees and a heavy turtleneck sweater. "I've still got the shivers. Mind if I help myself to a shot of your booze?" "Be my guest." Gly emptied half a water glass of the Canadian Club in two swallows. He reminded Shaw of an immense trained bear he'd once seen gulping a bucket of ale. Gly expelled a long sigh. "It makes me feel almost human again." "By my reckoning," said Shaw conversationally, "your decompression stage was 5 minutes on the downside. Are you feeling any ill effects?" Gly made as if to pour himself another drink. "A slight tingling sensation, nothing more." In a lightning movement, his hand shot across the table and clutched Shaw's wrist in a steel grip. "That message wouldn't happen to concern me now, would it, Dad?" Shaw tensed as the nails dug into him. He flattened his feet on the floor, planning to thrust his body backward out of the chair. But Gly anticipated his thoughts. "No tricks, Dad, or I'll snap your bone." Shaw sagged. Not from fear, from anger at being caught at a disadvantage. "You overrate yourself, Inspector Gly. Why should the British Secret Service bother itself about you?" "A thousand apologies," Gly sneered, maintaining the pressure. "I'm the suspicious type. Liars make me edgy." "A crude accusation from a crude mind," said Shaw, coming back on balance. I'd expect little else, considering the source. Gly's lips twisted. Clever word, super spy. Suppose you tell me you didn't contact your boss in London and receive an acknowledgement over 2 hours ago. And if I say you are mistaken? No good. I had a little chat with Doc Coley in the galley. Is your memory so rotten you've forgotten he helped you compose your report on that little gizmo? Or that you added a postscript after Coley left? A request for a rundown on Foss Gly. You know it. I know it. The reply is there in your hand. The trap door had sprung and Shaw had fallen through. He cursed his transparency. He had little doubt that the ugly man across the table would murder if given the slightest opportunity. His only hope was to stall and throw Gly off his stride. He tried a long shot. Mr. Villon mentioned in passing that you might prove unstable. I should have taken him at his word. The angry widening of the eyes told Shaw he had struck a nerve. He continued to turn the screw. I believe he even used the term psycho. The reaction was not what he expected, not what he expected at all. Instead of cold wrath, Gly's expression was suddenly transformed to one of enlightenment. He released Shaw's wrist and sat back. So the double-talking scum stabbed me in the back, Gly muttered. I might have guessed he'd eventually wise up to my scheme. He paused and looked at Shaw curiously. I get the story now. Why I was always sent to do the underwater dirty work. Somewhere along the line, you were to see to it, I was conveniently drowned by an unfortunate accident. Shaw was at a loss. None of this was going in the direction he intended. He flat out didn't know what Gly was talking about. He had no option but to string along. Very carefully, he removed the message from his finger with his free hand and flipped it on the table in front of Gly and studied his eyes. There was a fractional glance downward, no more than a second. But it was enough. What puzzles me is why you're risking your life for a government and a man who wants you dead. Maybe I like the company benefits. Wit doesn't become you, Mr. Bogus Inspector Gly. How much did Villon tell you about me? He didn't elaborate, said Shaw, mashing out his cigarette in an ashtray and noting that Gly's eyes followed the movement. He only suggested that I would be doing Canada a favor by removing you. Frankly, I wasn't keen to play the role of a hired assassin, especially without knowing why you deserved to die. What changed your mind? You did. Shaw had Gly's interest at a peak, but he still had no idea where it was taking him. I began to study you. Your French-Canadian tongue is letter perfect, but your English, now there hangs another tale. Not the accent, mind you, but the terminology. Words like booze and gizmo, expressions such as what's the scam, pure Americanese. Curiosity got the better of me, and I asked London to run a check on you. The answer is there on the table. You do deserve to die, Mr. Gly. No man deserves it more. Gly's face turned menacing, and his grinning teeth glistened yellow under the cabin light. Do you think you're man enough to take me, Dad? Shaw clutched the edge of the table with his hands and wondered how Gly intended to kill him. Gly would have to use a gun with a silencer, or perhaps a knife. A loud report would bring Coley and the crew of the tug rushing into the cabin. Gly sat with his arms crossed casually in front of him. He looked relaxed. Too relaxed. I don't have to bother. Mr. Villon had a change of heart. He's decided to turn you over to the Mounties. Shaw had taken a wrong turn. He could read the mistake on Gly's face. Nice try, Dad, but you blew it. Villon can't afford to keep me alive. I could put him behind bars until the next ice age. Just testing the water, said Shaw with feigned indifference. The report is on Villon, not you. He nodded at the tabletop. Read it yourself. Gly's eyes flicked downward. Shaw threw every ounce of his strength against the table in a twisting motion and rammed the corner edge into the sweater just above the belt line. A sharp grunt was the only reaction. Gly absorbed the momentum and scarcely recoiled. It would have knocked any other man across the room in agony. He clamped a great ham of a fist around a table leg and effortlessly lifted the heavy oak fixture to the ceiling. Shaw was stunned. The thing must have weighed 150 pounds. Gly slowly lowered the table and set it aside as easily as a child laying a doll in a baby carriage, and rose to his feet. Shaw picked up his chair and brought it down in a violent arc, but Gly simply grabbed it in midair, wrenched it away, and placed it neatly under the table. There was no anger, no savage glare in Gly's eyes, as they stared unblinkingly into Shaw's only 3 feet away. "I have a gun," said Shaw, fighting to keep his voice controlled. "Yes, I know," replied Gly, grinning satanically. "A quaint old-fashioned 25-caliber Beretta. I found it stashed in a boot beside your bunk. In fact, it's still there. I made sure before I came in here." Shaw realized he wasn't going to feel the hammer impact of a bullet or the cut of a knife. Gly was going to do the job with his bare hands. Shaw fought off a wave of mental nausea and lashed out with a vicious judo kick. He might just as well have stubbed his toe on a tree. Gly spun sideways and neutralized the thrust to his groin, taking the blow on his hip. He moved forward, taking no precaution to cover himself. He had the blank look of a butcher approaching a side of beef. Retreating until his back met a bulkhead, Shaw glanced wildly around for a weapon, a lamp or a book he could hurl, anything to slow 200 pounds of muscle. But tugboat captains are conceived for austere living. Except for a picture screwed into a panel, there was nothing in reach. Shaw pressed the flats of his hands together and whipped them in a scything chop to the side of Gly's neck. It was, he knew with sickening certainty, his last act of defiance. The result was the same as striking concrete, and he gasped in shock and pain. It felt as if both his palm bones had cracked. Gly, showing no ill effects, reached around the small of Shaw's back with one massive arm and pulled, while the other forearm pressed into Shaw's chest. Then Gly slowly increased the opposing pressures, and Shaw's spine began to bend. "So long, you limey twit." Shaw gnashed his teeth together as the agony suddenly mushroomed inside him. The air was squeezed from his lungs, and he could feel his heartbeat pounding in his head as the cabin began to dim and waver before his eyes. A final scream tried to force its way through clenched teeth, but died. There was nothing left now but the gruesome snap of his back. Death was the only release. Somewhere in the distance, it seemed miles off, came the sound of a loud crack, and Shaw thought it was all over. The relentless pressure fell away, and the agony dropped by several degrees. He went limp and crumpled to the deck. Shaw wondered what would happen next. A long walk down a dark tunnel before reaching a blinding light. He was vaguely disappointed that there was no music. He began to itemize his sensations. It struck him odd that he could still feel pain. His ribs ached and his spine felt as though it was on fire. Apprehensively, he opened his eyes. It took them a few moments to focus properly. The first objects he distinguished were a pair of cowboy boots. He blinked, but they were still there. Calfskin with stitched design on the sides, high heel and modified pointed toe. He turned his head and looked up into a craggy face with eyes that seemed to smile. "Who are you?" he mumbled. "Pitt. Dirk Pitt." "Strange. You don't look like the devil." Shaw had never doubted where he would eventually wind up. Now the lips smiled. "There are some who would disagree." He knelt and hooked his hands under Shaw's arms. "Here, let me help you up, Dad." "God, how I wish," Shaw murmured irritably, "that people would stop calling me Dad."